the music stylings of Snarky Puppy this morning. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It is the 13th of July, 14 minutes past 9 o'clock, and a delight to have you all here. We have a wonderful panel. They are all in studio, and I will introduce them in just a second. Before we get to that wonderful task, I do have to invite you, the listener, to join us. We would love to hear from you if you have anything on your mind about the topics that we will discuss this morning. All you have to do is write to us. The address is panel@wamc.org. Please use that address, as it is the only one who will get to us, and there are no substitutes. panel@wamc.org. So let me introduce the group to you this morning. J.P. Miller is in the house, the Empire Report's very own, the man behind said publication. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me, Joe.
It's still a publication if it's online, right? Is that true?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I think.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's interesting that the two print editors were the people who responded to that question,
yeah,
not you.
Yeah, I would say no. It's just a website with some links on it. That's what I would say.
We also welcome our dear friend Mike Spain, former Times Union Associate Editor, who is was off for a few weeks.
Just 1 week, Joe.
Oh,
just
was it one week?
It just seemed like a few.
No, when you're not here, it just goes right boom. We're just lovely. It's lovely to have you back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Very happy to be here.
We have all our friends today. Judy Patrick is here, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, former longtime editor of the Daily Gazette. Good morning, Judy Patrick.
Good morning. And I am so happy to see JP and Mike. I haven't seen them in so long. And it's
Is that true? This is the first time this group has been together. That is awesome.
Remotely.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
back to work and
it is nice. It's nice getting everybody back in the studio. Alan Shartok is back in the studio. He is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
JP calls me Shark Attack.
It's Shark Week, I think.
Shark Attack.
Shark Week. Shark Attack Week. Yeah. Shartok Week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, were you asking me how I'm doing?
I said good morning. How are you?
Well,
here
not
we
so,
go.
Not
here
so
go.
Good. I spent all day yesterday. I spent all day yesterday in our basement, which now has about 2 inches of water.
Oh, that's not good.
And I have to use a vacuum to get it in. Then I got to figure out how to get the water out of the vacuum and into the thing. This is not.
When you say into the thing, is it the sump pump?
No, we have to get. We have a silly sump pump. You know, just a little thing.
It's one of my favorite songs. Just a silly sump pump.
What we have to do is get a real sump pump installed that will take care of this. And upon examination, this is an old house, 1912.
Yeah.
Upon examination, we have found that this has happened before. And we can see the channels and things that they put in order to catch the water too late. But here I am. I've had 3 honorary doctorates. I've had, an earned doctorate. I was a full professor.
You've got a bad back.
I have a bad back, and I spent the entire day doing that thing.
All I can think of is like you in a little sorcerer's hat with like Mickey Mouse with the two with the bucket, like the two buckets running up the stairs, like the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
How did you know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
So anyway, I'm sure I am not the only one with a lot of water in their basement. And I keep looking up at the skies, and things are not good.
We have been besieged, so with rain and more on the way, of course. But we wish everyone, and you especially, Alan, that things dry up and get back to normal. We have a lot to talk about this morning. Let's get to it. We welcome your letters, as I mentioned. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We talked about voting rights yesterday for a good part of the program, and I remember at one point I said, well, you know, what are the Texas Democrats going to do? And Libby said, well, they're probably going to run away again. Well, they did. The Texas Democrats have fled the state of Texas. So what's going on here, if you're just joining this story, is that as Republicans in the Texas legislature have moved these voting restrictions and legislation that restricts voting in fairly substantial ways, that as it has moved forward, the Democratic lawmakers have opposed this. Now, they have left the state to stop passage of voting restrictions. Now, the Texas governor is saying they could face arrest when they return. At least 50 House Democrats landed in Washington late Monday. The exodus denies Republicans the recorded required two-thirds attendance level to conduct business, calling it into doubt whether plans to take up voting legislation this week could proceed. Speaking to reporters at Dulles International Airport, Texas Democratic leaders vowed to stay away from the state until August 7th, when the 30-day special session would end. "We are determined to kill this bill," House Democratic Caucus Chair Chris Turner said. In a statement, Turner and other leaders also pledged to pressure Congress to pass new federal voting regulations. "We're now taking the fight to our nation's capital. We are living on borrowed time in Texas," Turner and four other Democrats said in a statement. "We need Congress to act now to pass the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act to protect Texas and all of Americans from the Trump Republicans' nationwide war on democracy." The governor said Monday that the Democrats could face arrest for the quorum-busting maneuver when they return to the state, adding that he plans to continue to call new sessions until the legislature takes up the voting bills and other measures. So this is ridiculous, right? I mean,
he ain't arresting anybody.
Well, and how long can you stay away from your home? I mean, eventually you're going to have to go back for, you know, fresh underwear, right?
Take care of the basement with the
yeah.
water in it.
I would think so, eventually. And I would, of all the places to go, D.C. in the summer, really?
Yeah. Well, they had to do that because they wanted to make the point about the Democratic legislation that would correct these kinds of attacks, assaults on democracy.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll move on to like Ocean City, Maryland after
yeah,
a couple days.
More
yeah,
or
more appropriate to enjoy it. So, Alan, how effective is this maneuver? What is it? This just, to me, and maybe I'm naive on this, but to me, it is just avoiding the inevitable.
Well, we've seen it before. We have seen this attempt on state legislators to absent themselves, and it's really not worked. And I think the point you guys have just made is right. They will be going back. And I think that the results are almost inevitable. And yet, I think it's they're doing the right thing. They're playing the right hand. And we'll see whether or not the Democrats will do what they need to do to pass the national legislation, because that's going to be crucial here. Up to now, we have seen some errant Democrats take an oppositional view on some of this stuff. We'll see where they are.
Judy Patrick?
They're tilting at windmills. This is going to fizzle out. Although the idea of the governor arresting them when they return, that'll keep that alive for quite a while. I can see that being a campaign slogan for the Democrats, that the governor's putting us in jail. They're in Washington trying to change Congress's mind. That's not going to happen. I think the voters back home will see them as derelict in their duties. And at some point, they're going to have to go back because there's a ton of federal COVID money that they have to decide how to spend. And the voters are not going to be happy if they just let that sit on the shelf and have nothing done with it. So they eventually got to go back. They don't have the numbers. They know how to count, but they don't have the numbers to do what they need to do. So fizzle out.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, you said play the hand, Alan, and I think that's exactly what it is. They're just using procedural techniques to delay the inevitable. The longer they can delay it, the optics of it are, I think I agree with you, Judy, that, you know, people back home will look at it as being derelict in their duty. They've left the state. They look like they've abandoned their responsibility to do all the other things that a legislature does. And yet it does, to the broader audience, I think, underscore the conflict over voters' rights rules. I mean, you know, the Texas bill that they are blocking, at least temporarily, is pretty onerous. It basically it puts hurdles in front of all the people that were able to vote easily in the last election, and the turnout was higher in Texas, and it was higher across the country. If you want to drive a friend to the polls, you have to fill out paperwork in Texas.
You know, can you imagine?
Ridiculous. I mean, just all kinds of ridiculous obstacles. And people who work in service jobs, who work in the city, they need expanded hours to go voting and do early voting. They're going to cut a lot of that out. And this is happening everywhere else, too. But it's just making it harder to vote when we should be bending over backwards to make it easier to vote, and I expect that Biden will talk about that today.
I want to hear from JP, but you know, one of the things that we talked about yesterday was how do you enforce that? I mean, if you are signing up five people to go into your minivan to go down to vote, I mean, how do you enforce that, JP?
I don't know how they would enforce it, but I did think it was an impressive move. You know, I guess that it has happened in history that legislators leave to deny a quorum, but I don't think it happens very often. And it was a dramatic move. They got press. It was, you know, the number one story in the New York Times and the Washington Post today. So they are bringing attention to this issue that they care about. But I agree with the other panelists that it's unlikely to change the outcome in Texas or at the national level.
So when you look at the national level of not only what is happening and in hopefully the legislation that Democrats are hoping to pass nationally, but also the impact in other states as they look to change their voting regulations.
That's right, Joe. And I think we would be remiss not to talk about the political ambition of some of the actors involved. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Trump doesn't run to see Abbott, for example, putting himself forward as a presidential candidate. So there's a certain amount of showing off to the base that goes on in a situation like this.
Judy, when you go ahead.
No, it would behoove the Democrats and the Republicans as well to start focusing on making sure you get voters to the polls to help. I mean, there's some things that are inevitable obstacles, but they're the work of registering people. I mean, that is the meat and potatoes of voter turnout. I have often decried the fact that you get such low voter turnout in school board elections and local elections. You know, it's less than 50% often not. And in other countries, it's much higher. We need to do a better job of getting turnout. And I think instead of focusing so much on these lost causes in many of these Republican-controlled states, maybe Democrats there should start building up their voter registration.
We had a listener who wrote us a letter yesterday and said, but the fact of Democrats digging in deep and saying, okay, we have to get more people to the polls, that these regulations make that even more difficult to do. I don't know if that's true or not, but that was a perception.
Yeah, but the other part of this is, and we've talked about this, Joe, here on the panel, when you try to pull a repressive move like this, you sometimes build up a kind of resistance, and you may end up hurting yourself, getting more people out there who just resent it. Even some people in the middle who say, this isn't the way we're supposed to have a democracy. This isn't what we're teaching our children about representative government, for example.
And the Texas bill also gives more authority to these partisan poll watchers, yes, which was a really scary thing.
Well, that is, I think that's
the worst.
That is the worst, because a lot of the stuff that they're restricting, I mean, we don't even have in New York State, but the poll watchers are, that's concerning.
Yeah, you were talking before about how will they enforce it if you want to bring your minivan from the local church and pack it full of some members of your congregation and ride over to the polls on a Sunday morning and you haven't filled out the paperwork. Well, those partisan poll watchers will come out and they'll argue and they'll say that those votes can't count. And evidently that will have standing under this new law. But I agree. I think the trick is to get people assistance to help them vote and overcome these hurdles. If you send in an application for a mail ballot, a mail-in ballot in Texas, even under the new law, you can still vote by mail. They just can't send you one unsolicited like some places have. And so if you want to vote by mail, maybe if someone advises you, gives you the form and tells you how to do it, you can vote by mail and it becomes easy. There's ways around these hurdles, and hopefully it'll motivate people to get down and do what's necessary to make their vote and have their vote count.
So basically they've made carpooling illegal.
Yeah. It's not a very green solution, of course. No,
probably those who are arguing would not be overly concerned about the environmental impact of
and the question of who's in the car is somewhat important. In other words, if it's a car full of people of color versus a car full of white suburban people, where's the enforcement going to happen?
And this whole discussion, this is playing on Donald Trump's home turf. This is what he wants us talking about. This is what he wants his base and the Democratic base talking about, calling into question things like voting and voting results, which we always took for granted before he came in with his unfounded claims. You know, we all took for granted this is a good election. We're happy about the election, and now everything's being called into question.
And so another word for unfounded claims is lies, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We've been talking about Texas and the Texas legislature taking a the Democrats of the Texas legislature taking a road trip to D.C. I guess they flew. Probably.
They did fly.
First class.
They flew, and they
to
showed.
Dallas.
And on CNN this morning, they showed the plane.
The arrival.
Yeah, and they were all smiling, which I think is a technical error on their part. They shouldn't be smiling. They should say this is.
Has anyone
serious.
Seen who and financed flight the flight? Was it a charter plane, or did they take
it? Looked like a charter plane, yeah.
I guess they're getting some independent financing, and Beto O'Rourke is among those supporters. They're saying that it's not government-funded at all, but it is something for us to keep an eye on because it's going to be expensive if they're going to stay in Washington for the next 6 months.
Marty says Schumer and Senate Democrats should learn a lesson from the Texas State Democrats because they seem to be the only ones with courage. The National Democratic response to the GOP's war on democracy is pathetically unsuited for this very moment.
Hey, Mike, you were recently on a road trip and you went to Gettysburg and some thoughts went through your mind.
Oh, right. We stopped on our way from down in North Carolina where we were on vacation at Gettysburg, which is an inspiration. I urge people, if they can put it into their travels any time, they should stop by and walk the cemetery where and see the hill where Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address. Such a profound, short, brief statement that just identified the divisions in the country back then and questioned whether we could pull it all back together. And right now it just feels like we're still having that battle, trying to keep it all together in this country. And it was a true inspiration.
For the same reasons, by
yeah.
the way.
I think it's the remnants of that. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Dan writes and says, while I am happy you are talking about the Texas story, you should also pay attention to ongoing issues here in Dutchess County, where the legislature has proposed disbanding the redistricting commission and where there is ongoing controversy on whether there should be an election site on the Bard campus, which we have been covering and talking about. Those are big stories, too. But yes, this is all there are many tentacles to this. But thank you. Dan, we go to this letter from Diane, who said, I think we need to worry about the month of August, as Trump and his supporters working with him say and keep saying that Trump will be reinstated in August. They're also claiming that when Trump is reinstated in August, they will impeach President Biden. Should we be frightened of this rhetoric, and should the government be on high alert? Are we headed for an outright civil war?
Well, we should be frightened, obviously. Not because because Trump is going to be the president, But we should be frightened because, as we see and we've been talking about, the Republicans in some of these states are trying to steal these elections by changing the rules and getting away with it. And that is frightening.
And I don't mean to be hysterical in any way, shape, or form. However,
me neither.
We certainly thought that, I don't know, you look at what happened on January 6th, and doesn't this have eerie tones of I'm coming back? Where, I mean, if you listen to the speeches at CPAC, it seems like, you know, they're measuring for the drapes already for next month to move into the White House. If you are motivating the quote-unquote base, I don't know. How dangerous is that? Seems like a fair question that Diana's asking.
Yeah, it's more of the big lie. And if people are only hearing what goes on at CPAC and they're only watching a particular television network, Fox News, they're not hearing all of what we're saying and what's being written in mainstream, reputable news media and websites. They're just sort of getting fed the one line, and that just shows you how information can be manipulated and how important it is to try to get a broad perspective on anything before you draw your opinion.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this August 8, I don't know where it came from, but at some point there was discussion among the fringe that the Supreme Court was going to somehow unanimously declare Trump the victor of the election and oust Biden from the White House. It's just so fanciful and out of touch with reality.
But Trump has embraced it.
Right. And in many ways, we'd like to blame Trump and all his supporters and all the people who endorse what he says. But I think the people who are believing this have some responsibility, too. If you are sharing this kind of information on social media, you're part of the problem. And I think instead of, you know, feeling sorry for the Trump supporters who just, you know, follow him blindly, I think we need to start saying you're part of the problem and you need to fess up and start educating yourself about how, for example, the Supreme Court works.
Right.
Yeah.
And how elections work.
And how elections work. I was in Pennsylvania, as I said before, Gettysburg, and on the morning news yesterday, it said that the state legislature wants to confiscate all the voting results and the machines that were used last November so they can have an audit a la Arizona. And the state Secretary of State and the governor, who are Republicans, say, no, you don't need to do that. We audited this already. It was a perfectly straight election. But what it does is it gives a counter narrative to the idea that it was a full and fair election. And it just undermines trust. And that's really what's going on here. The big lie undermines trust.
The president doesn't have Twitter anymore, but he does have these...
The former president.
The former president has these press releases that he puts out just like every 4 or 5 minutes. But as that was happening yesterday, he kept on the new... Well, not new term, but he's used it a lot. But this rhino of Republican in name only, and none of these are just Republicans or Democrats in disguise. They're out to get us, and we have to fight back against these rhinos.
There is no better motivator for the base of the Republican Party than Donald Trump. And when, you know, I tend to watch and read mainstream media, and I don't see the Trump stuff. I read the front page of the New York Times. It's not there. I don't know where people watch the CPAC speech and get this stuff from Trump. I have to imagine it's on Twitter and Facebook. And so you have to, I think, look at Twitter and Facebook as to, is it free speech that they're spreading to everybody? And not just spreading, but they push to people that know that they want it. Or should they somehow be held responsible for, you know, broadcasting lies, you know, to the American people? And that's where they're getting it from, I think.
I was surprised. Well, of course, Fox is doing a lot of this, but and what is OAN and
what is it?
Newsmax.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I found surprising was that in the president, former president, the 45, made several pre 4th of July speeches. They were all covered by C-SPAN, which really surprised me. I wonder. I mean, obviously, I would think if you had a former president who was making a speech prior to July 4th, they probably would cover an Obama or a Clinton. but this isn't exactly a patriotic speech. It is a gripe fest.
No, I think C-SPAN is probably trying to be as even-handed as possible by being completely neutral. And in the process of being neutral, they're elevating and substantiating the big lie. And it's troubling. I don't think everybody has figured out how to handle this. You know, Trump is suing the Twitter and Facebook because he's blaming them for silencing him and saying that's illegal. And yet, I think you're right, JP. I think a lot of people get all their information by passing along information and stories. They are written. I mean, I read an AP story on the CPAC, performance over the weekend by Trump, and
that's not where his supporters are getting.
But they can get information that's reported, links to each other via Facebook and Twitter, and so the irony is he's suing them because he says that he's being silenced by them, but it's really promulgating his big lie.
Well, the one thing I saw coming out of CPAC was that he won 70% of the straw poll for 2024. And as we go along, he is an unpredictable guy, or maybe you say he's very predictable, but going to the crowds, getting the cheers, having sellout speeches only makes him want to, I think, run again.
Mm-hmm.
If he were to run again, he would basically, I think, be handed the nomination. Hard to believe that anybody would run against him. And so, and he, I imagine, thinks that he could win again if Biden seems vulnerable. So,
or if they load the election by stealing it, the very thing that he's always accusing everybody else of doing.
Right. And so we're going to be in a position in another short 18 months. You know, we're 18 months away from the midterms. As soon as that midterm happens, that starts
the presidential
election. And then Twitter and Facebook are going to have a tough decision to make as to this person's likely to be the nominee. Are you going to give him a platform to campaign? How are mainstream outlets going to cover it? And how are we all going to move forward? I feel like the last couple months with Biden in office, I feel like everybody's been able to breathe and have a little sense of normalcy. And I think most people, maybe even people that voted for Trump, say, wow, this is kind of nice.
Yeah.
A little toned down. But that may change in 18 months.
And of course, we don't fully understand whether Biden will run himself, whether Kamala Harris will run. And she's not getting high marks in the press right now. So we'll see.
Right.
Let's go to a couple of letters. Gray says the entire purpose of this voting restriction bill in Texas is to allow the legislature to negate uncontested elections. The ease of voting doesn't matter. They can undo any contest that they don't like. Then this from Eric. I think Texas Democrats have it all wrong. I know the show of leaving the state makes good theater, but instead they should be in their state using this moment to register more voters. The National Democratic Party should be sending people to register voters. This is where the battle will be won or lost. Then Adam says the federal government can launch a non-binding voting app or something more accessible that can serve as a check on state-run elections. Users would report if they were able to vote or not, and that their vote was or would have been to watch or watchers. That is how this listener suggesting a federal voting app to make things easier. James, which I don't think they want, right? The whole point of this is
to make things easier.
Don't want it
harder to vote.
We're not looking to streamline this. James says it took a significant amount of time for people in the media to switch from calling Trump's untruths to lies. Republicans are not trying to steal elections. They're working to overthrow the government. We cannot sugarcoat what is going on.
I agree with that.
And finally, Paxton says the false propaganda that Trump and other Republicans like Elise Stefanik are spreading is nothing but domestic terrorism. They are trying to undermine our democracy. I don't understand how it can be any point of contention or debate. We welcome your letters as well. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll continue with the letters and other topics when we return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain and J.P. Miller make up our panel this morning. We welcome your letters. We have many, and I will get to them. Panel at WAMC.org to add yours to the queue. Panel at WAMC.org. Leslie says, I live in one of the few Trump towns in Massachusetts. A so-called friend of mine who supports Trump told me I better get a gun because the rednecks in this town will be coming up the road to get me when things go down. He ended the conversation by telling me to blank off. For decades, people predicted that the closer we get to a white minority, the worse it will get. And that is before Fox was so blatantly flaming white nationalism. Russia and the U.S. right-wing support ethnic nationalism. As a white, non-white person, I clearly did understand who's coming for me. Good letter. We go to Mike. What concerns me more about these voter restrictions is the question of who will count the ballots. I do not like the legislature stepping and negating the voting results because of allegations of voter fraud. An allegation is not evidence. The courts have ruled this time and time again, but the Trump supporters keep trying. Anne, what are the chances, or is it even legal, if the Republicans cancel primaries in their states to give the nomination just to Trump?
That happened in a number of states the last time that they canceled the primaries and gave the nomination to Trump. It's not unheard of, especially if you – well, it's not unheard of if you have an incumbent. But Donald Trump is not an incumbent, at least in my eyes.
Lev says, if the insurrection hasn't motivated the Democratic Party to be more bold and grow a backbone, I don't know what will. I just don't understand why they aren't stronger, speaking in one voice, constantly in the media, and using the film footage of the attempts to murder Capitol Police. Why don't the Dems take lessons from the Republican playbook?
Can I just say congratulate the media? There are some media outlets that are doing a pretty good job of keeping the footage of the Capitol riot out front and center, yeah, so people don't forget what a horrible day it was.
Because that story is being rewritten by a lot of Republicans.
It's unbelievable.
And every once in a while, you're right, you turn on the TV and you're quickly reminded of what that day was like. Which, by the way, it was only 6 months ago, so... You know.
Well, to the writer of that last letter, we may see that single voice today when President Biden goes to Philadelphia to give an address about voters' rights. It could begin. I mean, I don't know if it will, and I don't really suspect they have it. They have their act together, but it could begin the Democrats' own response in one single voice to what's going on across the country.
Well, I don't know about the single voice, Mike, but I do know that they are aware that they're getting trammeled here, that they have to do something, that they have to have a voice, and they have to speak up and stand up, because right now they're ceding it to the other guys.
Right. I mean, are we going to have the buses that went through the South in the 60s to enroll people to vote, you know, and to try to bring around the civil, you know, capitalize on the civil rights movement and the Voters' Rights Act back in 65? I mean, are they going to be more of that, or are they going to just sort of sit back? I agree with you, Alan. It seems like the narrative has just completely been stolen by these states that are saying that we need safe and fair and honest and fraud-free elections, when we kind of have those.
Well, and that the fraudsters are the people who are yelling the most about fraud. That's always fascinating.
Gaslighting.
You know, but don't you think the Democrats have been complacent all through the Trump presidency? This is so crazy. You know, this is so outlandish that it's never going to – that it's going to fix itself. And that these proposals for voting rights are so off the charts that we don't really need – that it'll fix itself. I just sense some complacency there, that they're not doing anything to
– Well, they're certainly not doing enough. That's for sure.
To Mike's point, the President Biden will make what the White House is calling the moral case for voting rights in his speech today, centered around protecting ballot access in the face of authoritarian and anti-American restrictions, quote unquote. Biden will use his remarks in Philadelphia, according to Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, quote, to make the case to the American people about how this is a fundamental right. The address from Biden comes in the aftermath of former Donald Trump's big lie that he is spreading and continues to spread, including in a rambling speech at CPAC over the weekend.
Has he ever given a non-rambling speech,
Well, how could they editorialize like that of a rambling speech? Yes, exactly. I thought the same thing, Judy. Yes, aren't they all kind of rambling?
I just want to point out that you're both kidding, because every once in a while when you use sarcasm, we'll get a letter from somebody who will say, oh, no, you know.
Right.
I even think the State of the Union's address were somewhat rambling, because he would go off.
I think his inaugural address in 2017 was quite rambling. When he was in Texas over the weekend, he complained about, you know, they're not going to put windmills all over Texas. You know, we got plenty of oil here. And a fifth of their energy comes from windmills, actually, in Texas. He didn't know that, you see.
Daniel writes, I don't agree that the walkouts have been futile. The first walkout led to the Republicans dropping two very bad provisions in the original bill. Roseanne says, I thought after 2020 we were done with the crazy orange man. Not in my wildest dreams did I think he'd still be in the limelight. 2024 scares me to no end. Biden will not run again, and Harris would not win against Trump. Would there be anyone who would run against Harris in the primaries?
Sure there will. Everybody wants to be president.
List. Remember 23 of them last time came out.
Everybody wants to be president. We know that.
And also, if Biden's health is good and he's doing as well then as he is today, why wouldn't he?
If he can have some big wins, if he can get infrastructure through, if he can get some compromise on voting rights through, and get his budget through, you know, the budget bill through that will sort of supplement infrastructure to be his recovery plan, he could enter that election so strong that Trump will look at the numbers and say, I'm not going to run. I'll just let, you know, and pick whoever he likes at the moment.
It won't happen. It won't happen. He'll get the same guys, the same people that he's always had. And they don't look, I mean, how do you explain somebody who knows that their life will be discontinued if they don't take the shot, and yet on the basis of their perception that they're in the Trump camp, they don't take the shot?
And yet he has taken it. His family have all been vaccinated, you know.
Exactly.
Serena says, can the panel address the real possibility of Trump getting indicted in New York and how that would affect his aspirations in the Republican Party? Please. So they're asking that as a question. The investigations against him are serious and progressing. But are they progressing fast enough, and are they progressing to a point where he would indeed get indicted in the state of New York?
Well, obviously, the Weisselberg thing, the whole idea there was to make him turn because he knows everything that there is. And that isn't happening. So
nobody had to turn in his keys yesterday.
Yeah, but he's still the head. He's still the head financial.
Yeah.
Well, no, he technically is no longer, Weisselberg is no longer in his position. I mean, any company that has their CFO get indicted by a jury for these type crimes has to pull that person aside and can't let them continue in their job. That would be they never get a bank loan. They never get anything. You know?
Well, Mike, I don't know, after carefully reading my New York Times and Washington Post at 2 o'clock this morning, I don't know that that's the case. I think, in fact, they are saying that he will remain as the chief financial officer. They've just taken some of the portfolios away from him.
I read it as any large real estate firm like the Trump Organization has dozens of LLCs and different ownership stakes in golf courses and hotels and buildings and all that. And I believe that when you make those filings, the chief financial officer is named on those filings as such. And I think he was removed from a number of the filings. I don't know if he was removed from all of those filings.
No, you're right. It wasn't all of them.
And I also don't know whether he was removed as the chief financial officer of the Trump Organization itself, the corporate head. But it did indicate in the article that I read that he hasn't flipped. He's not out at the Trump Organization. He's still on Team Trump, if you will. The big thing, of course, that we're all wondering is he going to flip on Trump? Because they have been working on this case, I think, for a couple years, Cy Vance. And are these charges that he has brought the only charges that are going to come, or does he have a number of other charges that he is building a case for that he needs Weisselberg's testimony?
Nicely done.
Erica, real quick, one letter, and then we're going to go to a break. Erica says the Republican base will not be changed. That's for sure. The vengeance campaign has begun for them. They are all in on the joke and are all okay with it. Trump says, if it's bad for me, it's fake. If it's good for me, I like it. At what point do we start slandering them? They want cameras in schools. They want deregulation as the world is on fire. They want you silenced. They are gifting us with all these little gems, and we do nothing with it. We don't have to bite their ear off, but we damn sure better get in the ring, and I mean like right now. We'll let Erica's words ring for a moment. We'll take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome to back. To the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, JP Miller, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, all here. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters on voting, so I want to get to those and then we'll move on to other topics, I promise. But let's finish these up first. We go to Dan, who says, in our wish list for all that Biden might get accomplished, let's not forget the Supreme Court. We can't let Breyer pull another Ginsburg. Poor Justice Breyer.
Yeah, poor guy. Such pressure. But, you know, I think he's trying to make the point that it shouldn't be political. But, of course, it's all political.
Sure. It's very political. Karen says, media and Democratic politicians should call out the loud-voiced GOP politicians and Fox commentators who criticize Biden's efforts to persuade Americans to get COVID vaccinations. They have all been vaccinated. Trump, Taylor Greene, Cruz, Tucker Carlson. They will not risk their health. Only everyone who is gullible enough to listen to them, says Karen. Then
there are a lot of them.
There are a lot of them.
And they'll be dead because they're not taking the vaccine. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're correct. The numbers of 99%. Infections are on the rise. It's tragic because it's completely unnecessary. The vaccines are available to everybody, every adult, and everybody over age 16. So it's just a tragedy that people have lost or never had confidence.
Over 12, right?
Science. 12. No, over 12. Yes,
over 12.
Right. I'm sorry.
Over 12. No,
yes,
that's okay.
Correct. Yes.
I just want to. If you're 13, I want to make sure you know. That
12
you
can, is the cutoff. Right. If you're 13, go get a shot.
Yes.
You know, elected officials can lead by example here, and I'm not even sure if my congressperson has been vaccinated. That would be Elise Stefanik. Anybody know whether she's been vaccinated?
Well, like Tucker Carlson, a lot of people won't say.
Which means they got the shot.
Well, she did early in the vaccination period. She declined the shot that was offered to her as a member of Congress because there were, you know, she said others should get the shot first. I'm young and healthy.
Right, exactly.
Many editorials in her district that she should urge people to get the shot. But again, I don't think there's a clear answer as to whether she herself has received the vaccination or not, which. Okay.
Just curious.
How does that work? All right. Let's go to other stories. And while we're talking about the shot, let's talk about Johnson & Johnson and the vaccine warning. This comes, I believe there is at least one panelist in this room who received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Am I right on that?
Yes.
Okay. The Food and Drug Administration.
JP, J&J? Yeah.
I have no regrets, though.
Okay. All right. The Food and Drug Administration warned on Monday that the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine can lead to a increased risk of a rare neurological condition. Now, the pronunciation of this, I have a family member who has this condition, and I still do not. I've heard it butchered. So, does anybody, first of all, know how it's correctly pronounced?
I worked in print. Sorry,
Guillain-Barré.
Or Barre. I've also heard.
Yeah. I work in radio. I'm sorry.
You should know that.
It's Guillain-Barré.
Here comes 100 letters.
That's right. But I've also heard 100 different pronunciations. So There we go. But anyway, that condition, the syndrome, another setback for a vaccine that has largely been sidelined in the United States. Although regulators have found that the chances of developing the condition are low, they appear to be 3 to 5 times higher among recipients of the J&J vaccine than among the general population in the United States, according to people familiar with the decision. The warning was attached to fact sheets about the vaccine for providers and patients. This, of course, comes after other concerns, and while the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the one-dose shot, was actually shelved for a brief time after concerns about clotting. JP, I'll let you talk first on this, considering you are a recipient of the shot.
So I'm really excited about how well the vaccines are doing in this country. I'm a happy recipient of the J&J vaccine. I encourage everybody, especially if you might maybe you're a little timid about getting the vaccine, you can go get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It's only one shot. But the vaccines have done such a great job in our country. We had in New York State the other day one single death, and of course that's one death too many, but one single death. I'm kind of amazed at how well the vaccines are working, especially against the variants that are coming up. And I think that seeing side effects like this, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but I think we're probably going to, as we go along in the coming weeks and months, see more side effects come up with different vaccines. And that's just kind of the nature of science. But
as a former Republican,
one second.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. I want to get to. Here's the Google explanation.
Guillain-Barré,
according to Google, Guillain-Barré.
Like a singer, Guillain-Barré.
Mm-hmm. Guillain-Barré or a comedian.
Roseanne Guillain-Barré will be here tomorrow.
Guillain-Barré. Okay. You were saying, as a former Republican,
can you understand how many Republicans in this country are not taking the shot to save their lives?
I am an excited, enthusiastic vaccine supporter. I encourage everyone to get it. But if someone, for whatever reason, doesn't want to get it, I don't really hold that against them. I'm vaccinated. I'm fine. If they want to take on that risk, that's on them.
So unlike me, you really don't think they should be mandatory.
I think that mandatory vaccines, Joe Biden isn't promoting that. I don't think Andrew Cuomo is promoting mandatory vaccines. I think it might be considered kind of a fringe position.
Why? I mean, we see all these people dying. They're almost exclusively, I think it's 99% people who have not taken the shot. And the role of government is to protect people. And here is a real winner. I mean, take the shot or don't go into a school or a supermarket or anything else, and we're going to enforce this.
If that were a solution, I would expect that Joe Biden and Andrew Cuomo would be advocating for that. And for some reason, they're not.
Well, they're adding up the politics. I think that that's what it is, right? I mean, Andrew Cuomo went.
Which is how we govern ourselves, by politics and elections and their elected officials. And if the majority of the people thought that was a good idea, then they would be for it.
No, I don't agree with that at all. Not even a little. Not even a smidgen.
So we have some idea of how the public thinks, at least in New York. There is a Siena poll out this morning, this hour actually. 68% of New Yorkers polled in this coronavirus crisis poll from Siena College. 68% say the worst of COVID-19 is over. Large majority is comfortable doing traditional summer activities. 47% are still worried about getting sick. Fall predictions, 71% say schools will reopen to full in-person instruction, 76% say remote work will continue, and 50% say New York will experience virus resurgence. So half the people think that the virus will surge once again, even though 68% say the worst of it is over.
Well, this supports the argument that you're making, Alan, that everybody be required to have it, because when I think when people just decide they don't want it for whatever reason, unless they have a medical reason for not doing it, I mean, a valid medical reason, they have an allergy to vaccinations or something like that, what they're doing is they're giving the virus an opportunity to move across from
Absolutely.
One person to the next. And that's where the variants happen. The current variant is you can be protected. You are protected from the current Delta variant by the current vaccines. But there could be a variant that gets around that and can come back strong if even those protected by the current vaccines are not protected by a new variant. So in order to protect everybody, nearly everybody has to have the vaccinations. The best way to make that happen is to enlighten them and show them the way and have them do it rather than hold them down and force a needle in their arm. And I think politicians realize that. But this enlightening of people with facts and science is countered by Tucker Carlson and the gang.
And it's not working.
And I do think it is shameful that the president— the former president does not encourage his supporters to take the vaccine. It's shameful that Tucker Carlson has these crazy theories. You know, I see it pop up. He's got this crazy stuff. I think it's shameful. I think it's dumb for people not to have the vaccine. I think it's moronic. But do I think that the government should force it? No.
I mean, to Judy's point just a moment ago about Elise Stefanik. I mean, you have a district, and I don't know what the numbers are in that congressional district, but I think they're under 50%. If I'm correct,
I think you're correct.
And maybe even substantially under 43%, or 50% rather. And what is wrong with the congressional representative of that region going into schools and going into other places and saying you should get a shot?
They should be. And the fact that Governor Cuomo went out, he created lotteries. He said we're going to pay for your schools. He went all across the state. I think it shows, you know, he's obviously an embattled governor, but shows a lot of leadership that New York, I think, is one of the top one or two states in terms of percentage of vaccinated people. That's a huge feather in his cap that he did that. And the fact that the congressional representatives like Stefanik aren't doing it is shameful.
You know, in France, they're starting to require either vaccination or a negative COVID test to go into stores, restaurants, other kind of. So they're thinking about starting to require people to pay for their COVID test because it's easy now to get a COVID test for free. And if that ends, then that would encourage people to get vaccinated. So other countries are trying different strategies. Maybe we should look elsewhere to see what's effective, what works, and what doesn't.
Well, let me ask this. While mandates, you're against mandating people to be vaccinated, are you in favor of more places requiring you to be vaccinated in order to go inside or attend or participate?
I have my vaccine card.
Yeah.
I've never used it.
Right. It's the honor system.
I don't get the point of them. And I also think that, you know, there's something called game theory, which is once we're all protected, if someone isn't protected, that's on them. No.
Well, if you are indeed protected.
Yeah.
I mean, and that
which we
I
are.
Think,
that's what science says. We're protected.
Well, well why
until
is
their
on,
variant comes
yeah,
back.
Yeah, until
and
a variant
you.
Comes yeah. back. I mean, Pfizer is pushing, saying that they believe a booster is needed. The CDC is questioning that. There are still concerns and still data being collected on whether the Delta variant is fully covered and protects you from a vaccination, protects you from that variant. Not to mention the great risk. That I know Dr. Fauci talked about on Sunday, the great risk that if the virus is allowed to rage once again in places like the southern part of the United States, that other variants will emerge as well that also may not be covered by the shot. So while I agree with you, when do we know when all that's going on and if we are indeed protected?
I don't agree with JP. I think we ought to hold them down and give them a shot.
Well, I mean, to JP's point, I will say that in my what I find troubling is that when I'm if I go to do something and I put in like I want to buy a ticket to an art museum or something, and they'll say, oh, you have to be vaccinated and you have to show your vaccination card. And I'm like, oh, well, that makes me feel better. Like, I feel good about that. But if you don't actually have to show it.
Right. No, I've never showed it once.
No, that's it. I mean, that's it.
I was on the train yesterday to New York City and been to a concert at SPAC. No cards.
Yeah, and they say that you will have to have it. They say in the fine print, you know, you have to be vaccinated, and yet they're not checking it, and that's of great concern. And then the other issue too is that. So far, the only place I have had to show it is at a hospital, which I guess sort of makes sense.
Sort of.
But what about children? What about children below the age of 12?
Which brings up the school issue, right?
Right. They do not have the vaccine at this point. And do you want someone who has not been vaccinated, who is carrying the disease, to be exposed to your children where they might get it? I understand that a very small number of children get have actually gotten very sick with COVID, and most do not. But, I mean, do you want to put your children at risk, especially if variants are popping around the way Fauci described over the weekend?
Yeah, and it is, if you look at, and I realize Jim Hendler, who was our science guy yesterday, was saying, because I was saying that the numbers over the 14-day average are up 49%. And his argument was, yes, that's true, but because the numbers were so low that it doesn't take much to change that to be 49%. True, but it's still 49% increase. It's the wrong direction, and that seems concerning.
It sure does. Yep. And isn't the purpose of government, I think I probably said this already, to protect people? And we know people are dying, even you know, even stupid people are dying by, you know, huge numbers, and the government's role is to protect them.
But and if you go out and the president says, President Biden says, we're going to go out, we're going to go door to door, we're going to talk to people, we're going to make a concerted effort to get you vaccinated, and the right wing says, well, they're going to knock on your door, they're going to stick a needle in your throat, and they're going to tie you down and give you a shot. Well, then, you know, then that is
those
just
are two different things.
Yeah, so. I know. But what I'm saying is that you know, they are making demonizing the fact of people coming door to door and suggesting that you get vaccinated in areas of low vaccination.
99% of the people who are being infected don't have the shot.
Correct.
You couldn't ask for more proof.
This is from the people who demonize wearing masks. And just for the record, little kids really don't mind wearing masks.
They do fine.
They do fine with that. Mm-hmm. I know I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old grandson. They're fine. You have to tell them to take it off when they come.
Yeah, they come in the house and they're still wearing it. So you can take it off now, honey. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old grandchild, 7 years old, just passed. Isn't that a coincidence?
Mm. Yeah.
Do they
wear their masks?
They do.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. No problem. Pandemic effects, this is sort of not as important as what we were just talking about, but it's another finding from the Siena poll. The effects of the pandemic. Half gained weight, 38% got in shape, 51% felt depressed, 44% developed a new hobby.
Hmm. Yeah.
I wonder what kind of hobbies they were, you know.
Yeah. Well, Joe built a nice Lego.
I'm doing a lot of Lego. I'm doing a lot of Lego.
It's therapeutic.
I know people like puzzles, reading, different things that people have done. Gardening.
Some jigsaws, yeah.
A lot of people have been doing much more home repairs, that
kind
of thing.
Repair.
Yeah. So I don't know if you'd call that a hobby.
I don't know. You could clean out your gutter so that your drains are clear. And
I was going to say, I'm into plumbing myself. And boy, I don't like it.
All right, let's see. We've got some letters here. Saul says, I remember well the terror polio created when I was young. We all lined up in school and everyone got the shot. Somehow there is just not enough fear now. And people will say there's too much fear and that we're fear-mongering those on the left.
It's articulate.
Guillain-Barré syndrome. In April, I got Pfizer 1 and 2 shots. 8 days after the first shot, I developed the symptoms of the Guillain-Barré syndrome. At the urging of my family, I took the second shot, but I have not recovered from the first dose. My doctor told me to report it to my local county health department. Isn't that her job? The only way to truly diagnose the syndrome is a spinal tap. Well, no thank you. This is not just a J&J vaccine issue. There is a bigger conversation coming to all of this. Qualifier, I am not an anti-vax person. I encourage many to get the shot, but this is scary. I still cannot fully use my left side. Well, that is scary.
That is scary. It should be noted that there are people that develop it without any vaccines. I mean,
exactly.
10 out of a million, it's a rare occurrence, and it's slightly more occurs slightly more with people who've had the J&J vaccine, very, very slightly more. I mean, I read today, I mean, my doctor says I should get a Shingrix shot to prevent, you know, the
shingles.
And yet that there's been some incidents of people getting who've had Shingrix getting Guillain-Barré syndrome, or however
that's
you
right.
pronounce
nice
it.
Job, Mike.
But I'm still going to get the shot as soon as the pharmacy has it available. They keep running out. And I'm willing to take that risk because it'll protect me from shingles, which is a very bad
very
thing.
Very serious thing, yes.
We all took a risk when we drove here today. We take a risk all the time.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of risk in life, and you can't go through life risk-free, but some people are fearing this, especially because it's been drummed up that it's the government trying to hurt you.
Well, you can mitigate risk, right? I mean, you know, I remember once I had a physician a long time ago, and I said, he wanted me to get the shingles shot. I said, did you get it? Said, no. Me neither. Not yet, but I agree with JP. I'm going to get it.
You're going to get the shingles vaccine?
You bet.
So we have some letters here on the idea of mandatory shots. Barry says, what kind of democracy do we have if we force people to do something that they don't want to do? That is from Barry. We also have Karen. My mom got Guillain-Barré after a flu shot back in the 90s, and it left her in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. So it does scare me. But I got Pfizer vaccine, not J&J.
It's
I
terrifying.
Hope, though, that the scientists can figure out what why that may happen sometimes from these shots. Then the risk of not taking the vaccine is not borne by the individual alone. That person also risks putting the healthcare system under extreme pressure to provide extraordinary healthcare at great expense to those who refuse the vaccine. That an argument for why shots should be mandatory. And I think that is it for the letters that I have time for. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation with our panel. Last call on the letters. We'd love to hear from you. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll move on to other subjects. We have all kinds of things that we can talk about. We'll decide during the break exactly what those will be in our final moments. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, and JP Miller all with us. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. A couple of letters. Some of us taking us to task, others praising us, others just venting on other issues. Oh, I just deleted one. I'm sorry.
Well, the ones we want to hear are the ones taking us to task, obviously.
Yes. Okay, what about personal liberty, Alan? Or is that only important to you when you're not the one deciding what the government imposes on its people?
No.
You've decided that no one can legitimately decide to not get a vaccine,
and kill themselves. Yeah.
And now you want to force your values on others. They're
right.
Not hurting you by getting vaccinated. And even if they are, that's the price you pay for living in America. You can choose to live someplace else where the government does make your health care choices for you. We're drowning in your hypocrisy.
Wrong.
Okay. That's from Stacey. You did ask for that letter.
I don't care.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
I don't care. I want to save their lives, and they're resisting, and that's the way it is.
Nancy says, I don't think it's correct that 99% of the people getting infected aren't vaccinated. It's 99% of known infections, and that is an important distinction because last I checked, the CDC isn't tracking or testing the spread of the virus among vaccinated people who aren't seriously sick. And I believe a study from Israel reported Pfizer is only 60-ish percent effective against Delta. They are doing more testing than the U.S., and if the Delta is 60% more contagious than the original, and with cases rising in many states, to me, we are so far from out of the woods, and it's quite unwise to not still be wearing masks in public spaces.
Well,
the Israeli study, though, that gave that was not peer-reviewed, I believe. And, you know, I mean, there's questions about the data itself, but the CDC and Dr. Fauci over the weekend, I think, responded to those you know, we're still learning more. That's the thing about science. You need a lot of data. It has to be peer-reviewed. And then the best decisions are made, and they're not perfect, and they have flaws, right? Isn't that kind of what goes on here?
I agree with you 100%, yeah. Mike.
Kevin takes me to task, saying you seem to imply that the vaccine doesn't protect against the Delta variant. Prevailing wisdom and info from the CDC assure the vaccines do reliably protect against the Delta variant. Well, all I was doing is saying what the letter writer prior was saying, that there are concerns from other places, and also if you are not vaccinated, that what other variants will come out as a result of that.
But because enough people aren't vaccinated, is that what
right,
you're saying?
Because yes, right, because in those areas, there
you're giving,
is such...
You're giving it a chance to propagate.
The virus will jump from one to another, exactly. And that's when the variants happen sometimes.
Exactly. I just want to save lives, that's all.
Let's see. I'm going to skip over the email that weirdly has the word ice pick surgeon in the subject line.
Okay.
And go to Pam, who says, I have not had to show my card in New York. However, I recently traveled from Los Angeles and had to use it three times, once at an event, once at a sports arena, and once at a museum. So there is that in California.
Well, that's amazing.
Can you show your Excelsior app on your iPhone in California? I wonder if they honor it.
What I wonder too is, if let's say you don't have your card, you left it at home, can you put on a mask and will they let you in, or is it no one without the card can get in? That would be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
I know what it should be.
The risk of not taking the vaccine is not borne by the individual alone. That person also risks putting the healthcare system under extreme pressure to provide extraordinary healthcare at great expense. I may have read that letter already. I think.
Well, it's worth reading twice, I'll tell you right now.
All right. So let's go and move to other topics. We go to the question of family aid. The Biden administration will send up to $300 per child a month to most American families, thanks to a temporary increase in the child tax credit that advocates hope to extend. If all goes as planned, the Treasury Department will begin making a series of monthly payments in coming days to families with kids, setting a milestone in social policy and intensifying a debate over whether to make the subsidies a permanent part of the American safety net. With all but the most affluent families eligible to receive up to $300 a month per child, the United States will join many other rich countries that provide a guaranteed income for children, a goal that has long animated progressives. Experts estimate that the payments will cut child poverty by nearly half, an achievement with no precedent. But the program, created as part of the stimulus bill the Democrats passed over unified Republican opposition in March, expires in a year, and the rollout could help or hinder President Biden's pledge to extend it. Immediate challenges do loom. The government is uncertain how to get the payments to millions of hard-to-reach families, a problem that could undermine its poverty-fighting goals. Opponents of the effort will be watching for delivery glitches, examples of waste, or signs that the money erodes the desire of some parents to work. While the government has increased many aid programs during the coronavirus pandemic, supporters say the payments from an expanded child tax credit at a one-year cost of about $105 billion are unique in their potential to stabilize both poor and middle-class families.
This is the work of my congressman, Richie Neal, who thought it up and who brought it to the president of the United States got an acquiescence.
I have congressional representative envy.
What'd you say?
I have congressional representative envy.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You know, I was moved by what Cory Booker said, Senator Cory Booker said from New Jersey. He said it's the most transformative policy coming out of Washington since the days of FDR. I mean, it is one of those things where people did not think Social Security was a good idea. Others thought it was a wonderful idea. And it has prevailed, and it is a wonderful idea. It has prevented people from living in abject poverty. It isn't a lot of money, but it does prevent them from living in abject poverty, and it covers a big gap. If this does the same for children, it will be amazing. And it underscores a role of government, and that is to make sure that people are doing well and that there's not people going, not children going to bed at night starving, and not people who, I mean, one woman interviewed in this article said she was going to use the money to get the kids into like an arts program, you know, and learn music or something. Or another was going to use it to cover a day camp program so that they she could work. You know, there's so many ways that children's lives can be stabilized and made better by this. I really have high hopes for it.
JP? I agree with Mike, and I'm wondering why Joe Biden is speaking about voting rights today instead of touting this unbelievably transformative thing that's going into effect. You know, if you look at polls of the American people of what are the top issues facing America, voting rights doesn't get on the top five or the top 10, but income inequality does, and the economy does. And so this is if I were a member of Congress, a Democratic member of Congress, if I were Joe Biden, if I were Vice President Harris, this is what I would be talking about rather than voting rights. This is a winning issue for the midterms. This is a winning issue for reelection. They should be thumping this hard rather than talking about voting rights.
Well, you can probably talk about both, right?
I was going to say that, too.
Yeah, well, and I should say that the program goes into effect soon, so maybe they will. I don't know, but it's a good point, Mike.
No, I disagree.
I'm sorry, Judy.
Yeah, those checks land I think on the 15th, which is this week. One of the things we should keep in mind is that there is incredible poverty out there that is often hidden. People don't understand how many poor children there are who are really struggling, how many families are struggling. It's all over. It's along the, you know, country roads and in the big cities. And you know, over the decades of watching government work, I've seen millions and billions of dollars go to things far less worthy than helping a family survive. And you know what, let's not be judgmental about how they spend their money, and you know, whether or not the mothers in, you know, the local convenience store are buying cigarettes. Just let it go. Let these people have the money and be able to, you know, pay a babysitter to maybe go back to work a little bit. It's truly the poverty. I think the media needs to do a better job of telling that story.
Well, those are beautiful words, Judy Patrick, but let's let's counter that with the words of Senator Marco Rubio, the Republican of Florida, who said that the new payments with no work required would resurrect a failed welfare system and provide free money for criminals and drug addicts.
Yeah, will be some problems. There will be some abuses, but they will be minor. And, you know, we will keep on top of it. That seems like the Republican line. I hate to say it, but it does seem.
But JP's right. If this succeeds, this is going to be the road to reelection.
This is what they should be talking about. They win on this issue. Marco Rubio saying that versus Joe Biden saying what he will. That is a winning issue with moderate blue collar workers throughout the country, swing voters in all the swing states. This is where Democrats win.
And this, children grow up and become voters and become citizens, and this is an important way of building our country, of creating a stronger economy, a stronger educational system. This is how we build a foundation for a great country. Let's not forget that, Marco.
I like the idea. We don't even have kids. It's like it just makes sense, right?
But I also agree, Judy, that I think people do not realize how many people are poor and what that means and the struggles and the stresses in their lives just making ends meet.
You know, we live, Judy and I live in a county that I believe it's like 66% or 67% live below the poverty line. Wow. I mean that is substantial. And you look at what impact this will have, I think, on those families, and it would seem to me to be quite impactful.
Yeah, so this is 1 year, and there's hopes that it will be renewed for the long term. And you know what? We can see. We'll watch and see what happens. I mean, the reporters will be out there, the advocates and the opposition will be out there watching and see what happens. We'll see what happens.
All right. Let's go to this. Let's see, a couple letters here. David says, yes, car driving is risky. I'm tired of the equivalents being batted around when talking about COVID vaccines. I wear a seatbelt. I don't drive 90 miles an hour with my eyes closed. I maintain the brakes, tires, et cetera, to lessen the risk of driving. And I wear a mask even though I'm fully vaccinated. Check. Then we go to Philip, went to a bar to get some wings, ran into an old acquaintance. This is how all great stories start.
How are the wings?
Was there a rabbi, a priest, and a minister there?
And they walked into the bar, which is odd, because you think when the priest walked into the bar, the rabbi would say, oh, there's a bar there. After talking for a while, she said COVID-19 is a fake. People are not dying from it at all or even getting sick, and there was no changing her mind. So at this point is when you say, check, please. She also called Trump God. I couldn't wait to leave. I have given up trying to change minds.
Yeah, that is it's an uphill battle. You can't change everyone's mind.
But you can change a few. I think you can't give up the battle.
What was the Lincoln line? You can fool some of the people all the time and all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
Oh, that Lincoln. Gloria says, I'm going to guess that the same people decrying government mandate vaccinations are probably the very same people who insist a woman gives birth. That from Gloria. All right, we have time for one more topic. 3 minutes left in our time together this morning. Probably even time for your letter as well. Let's go to...
that little island south of Florida.
Yes, we'll talk about Cuba, and we'll talk about the president of the United States seizing on protests with tougher tone toward Cuba. This in sharply warning Cuba's leaders Monday against repressing a wave of anti-government protesters, President Biden signaled a more muscular approach toward a communist regime that he has previously pledged to engage, taking a step toward shifting a democratic message that some in the party feel has been politically costly. A day after the island's biggest demonstrations in decades, Biden praised Cubans' clarion call for freedom following decades of repression and economic suffering to which they have been subjected by Cuba's authoritarian regime. Not a quote. Rhetoric that has often been more typical of conservative Republicans in Florida. Later, Biden warned Havana against attempts to silence the voice of the people of Cuba. Anyone?
Well, I'm disappointed. I really thought the Obama approach to Cuba after Castro was out of power, after Castro died and his brother was out of power, to kind of engage was the right direction. You know, they're a very... interesting country that has a very diverse population, and we've been embargoing them since 1958 when Castro did the revolution. But opening the door to engagement, I thought, was a good idea, and Biden supported that. But I think he has his eye on the election and the eye on, you know, Democrats in Florida are getting more votes in Florida from Cuban Americans, and he's playing it safe. And I guess that's what politicians do. They shift their positions to make sure that they don't alienate certain groups and then in the process risk alienating others.
Alan?
Well, that's right. The real problem is the politicians have the guts to be leaders when they know something is right, or they just want to be reelected and do what they need to do in order to assure that that happens. Mike, we've all seen it. Just look at Stefanik and her conversion from
a moderate
to
all-out Trumper, 100% Trumper.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna end there this morning. My thanks to everybody. Thank you for all your letters. Thanks for wonderful panelists. Alan, thank you very much. Good luck with the basement.
I'll be back to it this afternoon. If anybody wants to come over and help, fine.
Bring a bucket. Judy Patrick, great to see you. Mike and JP, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good to have you all back in the studio. We'll be back right after this.